I was afraid of what the end of our journey might bring. What if we found the stag, and I claimed the antlers? How might an amplifier that powerful change me? Would it be enough to free us from the darkling? If only we could stay this way, walking side by side, sleeping huddled beneath the stars. Maybe these empty plains and quiet groves could shelter us as they had sheltered Morozova's herd, and keep us safe from the men who sought us. They were foolish thoughts. Tabea was an inhospitable place, a wild and empty world of bitter winters and grueling summers. And we weren't strange and ancient creatures who roamed the earth at twilight. We were just Mal and Alina, and we could not stay ahead of our pursuers forever. A dark thought that had flitted through my head for days now finally settled. I sighed, knowing that I had put off talking to Mal about this problem for too long. It was irresponsible, and given how much we'd both risked, I couldn't let it continue. That night, Mal was almost asleep, his breathing deep and even, before I worked up the courage to speak. "Mal," I began. Instantly he came awake, tension flooding through his body as he sat up and reached for his knife. "No," I said, laying a hand on his arm. "Everything's all right. But I need to talk to you." "Now?" he grumbled, flopping down and throwing his arm back around me. I sighed. I wanted to just lie there in the dark, listening to the rustle of wind in the grass, warm in this feeling of safety, however illusory. But I knew I couldn't. "I need you to do something for me," he snorted.
"You mean other than deserting the army, scaling mountains, and freezing my ass off on the cold ground every night?"
"Yes."
"Humph," he grumbled noncommittally,
his breath already returning to the deep, even rhythm of sleep. "Mal," I said clearly, "if we don't make it, if they catch up to us before we find the stag, you can't let them take me." He went perfectly still. I could actually feel his heart beating. He was quiet for so long that I began to think he'd fallen back asleep. Then he said,
"You can't ask that of me."
"I have to." He sat up, pushing away from me, rubbing a hand over his face. I sat up too, drawing the furs tighter around my shoulders, watching him in the moonlight.
"No."
"You can't just say no, Mal," you asked.
I answered, "No."
He stood up and walked a few steps away.
"If he puts that collar on me, you know what it will mean. How many people will die because of me? I can't let that happen. I can't be responsible for that."
"No. You had to know this was a possibility when we headed north, Mal." He turned and strode back, dropping into a crouch in front of me so that he could look into my eyes.
"I won't kill you, Alina."
"You may have to."
"No,"
he repeated, shaking his head, looking away from me.
"No, no, no."
I took his face in my cold hands, turning his head until he had to meet my gaze.
"Yes." "I can't, Alina. I can't."
"Mal, that night at the little palace, you said the Darkling owned me." He winced slightly.
"I was angry. I didn't mean..."
"If he gets that collar,
he really will own me completely, and he'll turn me into a monster. Please, Mal, I need to know you won't let that happen to me. How can you ask me to do this?"
"Who else could I ask?" He looked at me, his face full of desperation and anger and something else I couldn't read. Finally, he nodded once. "Promise me, Mal." His mouth set in a grim line, and a muscle twitched in his jaw. I hated doing this to him, but I had to be sure. "Promise me."
"I promise,"
he said hoarsely. I breathed a long sigh, feeling relief flood through me. I leaned forward, resting my forehead against his, closing my eyes.
"Thank you."
We stayed like that for a long moment. Then he leaned back. When I opened my eyes, he was looking at me. His face was inches from mine, near enough that I could feel his warm breath. I dropped my hands from his stubbled cheek, suddenly aware of just how close we were.
He stared at me for a moment, and then stood abruptly and walked into the dark. I stayed awake for a long time, cold and miserable, gazing into the night. I knew he was out there, moving silently through the new grass, carrying the weight of the burden I had placed on him. I was sorry for it, but I was glad that it was done. I waited for him to return, but finally I fell asleep, alone beneath the stars. We spent the next few days in the area surrounding Chernest, scouring miles of terrain for signs of Morozova's herd, drawing as close to the outpost as we dared. With every passing day, Mal's mood darkened. He tossed in his sleep and barely ate. Sometimes I woke to him thrashing about under the firs, mumbling, "Where are you? Where are you?" He saw signs of other people, broken branches, displaced rocks, patterns that were invisible to me until he pointed them out, but no signs of the stag. Then one morning he shook me awake before dawn. "Get up," he said. "They're close. I can feel it." He was already pulling the furs off me and shoving them back into his pack. "Hey," I complained, barely awake, trying to yank back the covers to no avail. "What about breakfast?" He tossed me a piece of hardtack. "Eat and walk. I want to try the western trails today. I have a feeling." "But yesterday you thought we should head east." "That was yesterday," he said, already shouldering his pack and striding into the tall grass. "Get moving. We need to find that stag so I don't have to chop your head off." "I never said you had to chop my head off," I grumbled, rubbing the sleep from my eyes and stumbling after him. "Run you through with a sword, then? Firing squad?"
I was thinking something quieter, like maybe a nice poison.
"All you said was that I had to kill you. You didn't say how." I stuck my tongue out at his back, but I was glad to see him so energized, and I supposed it was a good thing that he could joke about it all. At least I hoped he was joking. The western trails took us through groves of squat larches and past meadows clustered with fireweed and red lichen. Mal moved with purpose, his step light as always. The air felt cold and damp, and a few times I caught him glancing nervously at the overcast sky, but he drove onward. Late in the afternoon, we reached a low hill that sloped gently down into a broad plateau covered in pale grass. Mal paced along the top of the slope, ranging west and then east. He walked down the hill and up the hill and down it again until I thought I would scream. At last, he led us to the leeward side of a large cluster of boulders, slid his pack off his shoulders, and said, "Here." I shook a fur out on the cold ground and sat down to wait, watching Mal pace uneasily back and forth. Finally, he sat down beside me, eyes trained on the plateau, one hand resting lightly on his bow. I knew that he was imagining them there, picturing the herd emerging from the horizon, white bodies glowing in the gathering dusk, breath pluming in the cold. Maybe he was willing them to appear. This seemed like the right place for the stag, fresh with new grass and spotted with tiny blue lakes that shone like coins in the setting sun. The sun melted away and we watched the plateau turn blue in the twilight. We waited, listening to the sound of our own breath and the wind moaning over the vastness of Tsibea. But as the light faded, the plateau stayed empty. The moon rose, obscured by clouds. Mal didn't move. He sat still as stone, staring out into the reaches of the plateau, his blue eyes distant. I pulled the other fur from the pack and wrapped it around his shoulders and mine. Here, in the lee of the rock, we were protected from the worst of the wind, but it wasn't much for shelter. Then he sighed deeply and squinted up at the night sky. "It's going to snow. I should have taken us into the woods, but I thought..." He shook his head. "I was so sure."
"It's okay," I said, leaning my head against his shoulder. "Maybe tomorrow."
"Our supplies won't last forever. And every day we're out here is another chance for us to get caught."
"Tomorrow," I said again.
"For all we know, he's found the herd already. He's killed the stag, and now they're just hunting us."
"I don't believe that,"
Mal said nothing. I pulled the fur up higher and let the tiniest bit of light blossom from my hand.
What are you doing?
I'm cold.
It isn't safe, he said, yanking the fur up to hide the light that shone warm and golden on his face.
We haven't seen another living soul for over a week, and staying hidden won't do us much good if we freeze to death.
He frowned, but then he reached out, letting his fingers play in the light, and said, That's really something.
Thanks, I said, smiling.
Mikhail is dead.
The light sputtered in my hand.
What? He's dead. He was killed in Fyrda. Dubrov, too.
I sat frozen in shock. I'd never liked Mikhail or Dubrov, but none of that mattered now.
I didn't realize.
I hesitated. How did it happen?
For a moment I didn't know if he would answer or even if I should have asked.
He stared at the light that still glimmered from my hand, his thoughts far away.
We were way up north, near the permafrost, way past the outpost at Chernest, he said quietly. We had hunted the stag almost all the way into Fyrda. The captain came up with this idea that a few of us should cross the border disguised as Fyrdans and keep tracking the herd. It was stupid. Ridiculous, really. Even if we managed to get through the border country undiscovered, what were we supposed to do if we caught up with the herd? We had orders not to kill the stag, so we'd have to capture it and then somehow get it back over the border into Ravka. It was insane.
I nodded. It did sound crazy.
So that night, Mikhail and Dubrov and I laughed about it, talked about how it was a suicide mission, and how the captain was a complete idiot, and we toasted the poor bastards who got stuck with the job. And the next morning, I volunteered.
Why? I asked, startled. Mal was silent again. At last he said,
You saved my life on the Shadowfold, Alina.
And you saved mine, I countered, unsure of what any of that had to do with a suicide mission into Fyrda. But Mal didn't seem to hear me.
You saved my life, and then in the Grisha tent, when they led you away, I didn't do anything. I stood there and let him take you.
What were you supposed to do, Mal?
Something. Anything.
Mal. He ran a hand through his hair in frustration.
I know it doesn't make sense, but it's how I felt. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I kept seeing you walk away, seeing you disappear.
I thought of all the nights I had lain awake in the little palace, remembering my last glimpse of Mal's face vanishing into the crowd as the Darkling's guards led me away, wondering if I would ever see him again. I had missed him so terribly. But I had never really believed that Mal might be missing me just as much.
I knew we were hunting the stag for the Darkling, Mal continued. I thought, I had this idea that if I found the herd, I could help you. I could help to make things right.
He glanced at me, and the knowledge of how very wrong he had been passed between us.
Mikhail didn't know any of that. But he was my friend, so like an ass, he volunteered too. And then, of course, Dubrov had to sign on. I told them not to, but Mikhail just laughed and said he wasn't going to let me get all the glory.
What happened?
9 of us crossed the border, 6 soldiers and 3 trackers. 2 of us came back.
His words hung in the air, cold and final. 7 men dead in pursuit of the stag, and how many others that I didn't know about. But even as I thought it, a disturbing idea entered my mind. How many lives could the stag's power save? Mal and I were refugees, born to the wars that had raged at Ravka's borders for so long. What if the Darkling and the terrible power of the Shadowfold could stop all that? Could silence Ravka's enemies and make us safe forever?
Not just Ravka's enemies, I reminded myself. Anyone who stands against the Darkling. Anyone who dares oppose him. The Darkling would make the world a wasteland before he ceded one bit of power.
Mal rubbed a hand over his tired face. It was all for nothing anyway. The herd crossed back into Ravka when the weather turned. We could have just waited for the stag to come to us.
I looked at Mal, at his distant eyes and the hard set of his scarred jaw. He looked nothing like the boy I'd known. He'd been trying to help me when he went after the stag. That meant that I was partially responsible for the change in him, and it broke my heart to think of it.
I'm sorry, Mal. I'm so sorry. It's not your fault, Alina. I made my own choices, but those choices got my friends killed.
I wanted to throw my arms around him and hug him close, but I couldn't. Not with this new Mal. Maybe not with the old one either, I admitted to myself. We weren't children anymore. The ease of our closeness was a thing of the past. I reached out and laid a hand on his arm.
If it's not my fault, then it's not yours either, Mal.
Mikhail and Dubrov made their own choices, too. Mikhail wanted to be a good friend to you, and for all you know, he had his own reasons for wanting to track the stag. He wasn't a child, and he wouldn't want to be remembered as one.
Mal didn't look at me, but after a moment he laid his hand over mine. We were still sitting that way when the first flakes of snow began to fall.
Chapter 19. My light kept us warm through the night in the lee of the rock. Sometimes I dozed off, and Mal had to nudge me awake so that I could pull sun across the dark and starlit stretches of Tzebaya to warm us beneath the firs. When we emerged the next morning, the sun shone brightly over a world blanketed in white. This far north, snow was common well into the spring, but it was hard not to feel that the weather was just another part of our bad luck. Mal took one look at the pristine expanse of the meadow and gave a disgusted shake of his head. I didn't have to ask what he was thinking. If the herd had been close by, any sign they had left would have been covered by snow. But we would leave plenty of tracks for anyone else to follow. Without a word, we shook out the furs and stowed them away. Mal tied his bow to his pack, and we began the trek across the plateau. It was slow going. Mal did what he could to disguise our tracks, but it was clear that we were in serious trouble. I knew Mal blamed himself for not being able to find the stag, but I didn't know how to fix that. Tzebaya felt somehow bigger than it had the previous day. Or maybe I just felt smaller. Eventually, the meadow gave way to groves of thin silver birches and dense clusters of pines, their branches laden with snow. Mal's pace slowed. He looked exhausted, dark shadows lingering beneath his blue eyes. On an impulse, I slid my gloved hand into his. I thought he might pull away, but instead he squeezed my fingers. We walked on that way, hand in hand, through the late afternoon. The pine boughs clustered in a canopy high above us as we moved deeper into the dark heart of the woods. Around sunset, we emerged from the trees into a little glade, where the snow lay in heavy, perfect drifts that glittered in the fading light. We slipped into the stillness, our footfalls muffled by the snow. It was late. I knew we should be making camp, finding shelter. Instead, we stood there in silence, hands clasped, watching the day disappear.
"Alina," he said quietly, "I'm sorry for what I said that night at the little palace."
I glanced at him, surprised. Somehow, that all felt like such a long time ago.
"I'm sorry, too," I said. "And I'm sorry for everything else."
I squeezed his hand. I knew we didn't have much chance of finding the stag.
"No," he said, looking away from me. "No, not for that. When I came after you, I thought I was doing it because you saved my life, because I owed you something."
My heart gave a little twist. The idea that Mal had come after me to pay off some kind of imagined debt was more painful than I'd expected.
"And now?" "Now I don't know what to think. I just know everything is different."
My heart gave another miserable twist.
"I know," I whispered.
"Do you?
That night at the palace when I saw you on that stage with him, you looked so happy, like you belonged with him." I can't get that picture out of my head.
I was happy, I admitted. In that moment, I was happy.
I'm not like you, Mal. I never really fit in the way that you did. I never really belonged anywhere.
You belonged with me, he said quietly.
No, Mal, not really. Not for a long time.
He looked at me then, and his eyes were deep blue in the twilight.
Did you miss me, Alina? Did you miss me when you were gone?
Every day, I said honestly.
I missed you every hour. And you know what the worst part was? It caught me completely by surprise. I'd catch myself walking around to find you, not for any reason, just out of habit, because I'd seen something that I wanted to tell you about, or because I wanted to hear your voice. And then I'd realize that you weren't there anymore. And every time, every single time, it was like having the wind knocked out of me. I've risked my life for you. I've walked half the length of Ravka for you. And I'd do it again, and again, and again, just to be with you. Just to starve with you and freeze with you and hear you complain about hard cheese every day. So don't tell me we don't belong together, he said fiercely.
He was very close now, and my heart was suddenly hammering in my chest.
I'm sorry it took me so long to see you, Alina. But I see you now.
He lowered his head, and I felt his lips on mine. The world seemed to go silent, and all I knew was the feel of his hand in mine as he drew me closer and the warm press of his mouth. I thought that I'd given up on Mal. I thought the love I'd had for him belonged to the past, to the foolish, lonely girl I never wanted to be again. I tried to bury that girl and the love she'd felt, just as I'd tried to bury my power. But I wouldn't make that mistake again. Whatever burned between us was just as bright, just as undeniable. The moment our lips met, I knew with pure and piercing certainty that I would have waited for him forever. He pulled back from me, and my eyes fluttered open. He raised a gloved hand to cup my face, his eyes searching mine. Then, from the corner of my eye, I caught a flickering movement.
Mal, I breathed softly, gazing over his shoulder. Look.
Several white bodies emerged from the trees, their graceful necks bent to nibble at the grasses on the edge of the snowy glade. In the middle of Morozova's herd stood a massive white stag. He looked at us with his great dark eyes, his silvery antlers gleaming in the half-light. In one swift movement, Mal drew his bow from the side of his pack.
"I'll bring it down, Alina. You have to make the kill," he said.
"Wait," I whispered, laying a hand on his arm. The stag walked slowly forward and stopped just a few yards from us. I could see his sides, rising and falling, the flare of his nostrils, the fog of his breath in the chill air. He watched us with eyes dark and liquid. I walked toward him.
"Alina," Mal whispered.
The stag didn't move as I approached him, not even when I reached out my hand and laid it on his warm muzzle. His ears twitched slightly, his hide glowing milky white in the deepening gloom. I thought of everything Mal and I had given up, the risks we'd taken. I thought about the weeks we had spent tracking the herd, the cold nights, the miserable days of endless walking. And I was glad of it all, glad to be here and alive on this chilly night, glad that Mal was beside me. I looked into the stag's dark eyes and knew the feel of the earth beneath his steady hooves, the smell of pine in his nostrils, the powerful beat of his heart. I knew I could not be the one to end his life.
"Alina," Mal murmured urgently. "We don't have much time. You know what you have to do."
I shook my head. I could not break the stag's dark gaze.
"No, Mal. We'll find another way."
The sound was like a soft whistle on the air, followed by a dull thunk, as the arrow found its target. The stag bellowed and reared up, an arrow blooming from his chest, and then crumpled to his forelegs. I staggered backward as the rest of the herd took flight, scattering into the forest. Mal was beside me in an instant, his bow at the ready, as the clearing filled with charcoal-clad oprichniki, and Grisha cloaked in blue and red.
"You should have listened to him, Alina."
The voice came clear and cold out of the shadows, and the darkling stepped into the glade, a grim smile playing on his lips, his black kefta flowing behind him like an ebony stain. The stag had fallen on his side and lay in the snow, breathing heavily, his black eyes wide and panicked. I felt Mal move before I saw him. He turned his bow on the stag and let it fly, but a blue-robed squaller stepped forward, his hand arcing through the air. The arrow swerved left, falling harmlessly into the snow. Mal reached for another arrow, and at the same moment the darkling threw his hand out, sending a black ribbon of darkness rippling toward us. I raised my hands and light shot from my fingers, shattering the darkness easily. But it had only been a diversion. The darkling turned on the stag, lifting his arms in a gesture I knew only too well. "No!" I screamed, and without thinking I threw myself in front of the stag. I closed my eyes, ready to feel myself torn in half by the cut. But the darkling must have turned his body at the last moment. The tree behind me split open with a loud crack, tendrils of darkness spilling from the wound. He'd spared me, but he'd also spared the stag. All humor was gone from the darkling's face as he slammed his hands together, and a huge wall of rippling darkness surged forward, engulfing us and the stag. I didn't have time to think. Light bloomed in a pulsing, glowing sphere, surrounding me and Mal, keeping the darkness at bay and blinding our attackers. For a moment, we were at a stalemate. They couldn't see us, and we couldn't see them. The darkness swirled around the bubble of light, pushing to get in.
"Impressive," said the darkling, his voice coming to us as if from a great distance. "Bagra taught you far too well. But you're not strong enough for this, Alina."
I knew he was trying to distract me, and I ignored him.
"You, Tracker, are you so ready to die for her?"
the darkling called. Mal's expression didn't change. He stood, bow at the ready, arrow knocked, turning in a slow circle, searching out the darkling's voice.
"That was a very touching scene we witnessed," he sneered. "Did you tell him, Alina? Does the boy know how willing you were to give yourself to me? Did you tell him what I showed you in the dark?"
A wave of shame rushed through me and the glowing light faltered. The darkling laughed. I glanced at Mal. His jaw was set. He radiated the same icy anger I had seen the night of the winter fate. I felt my hold on the light slip and I scrambled for it. I tried to refocus my power. The sphere stuttered with fresh brilliance, but I could already feel my reach brushing up against the boundaries of what I could do. Darkness began to leak into the edges of the bubble like ink. I knew what had to be done. The darkling was right. I wasn't strong enough, and we wouldn't have another chance.
"Do it, Mal," I whispered. "You know what has to happen."
Mal looked at me, panic flaring in his eyes. He shook his head. Darkness surged against the bubble. I stumbled slightly.
"Quick, Mal, before it's too late."
In one lightning movement, Mal dropped his bow and reached for his knife.
"Do it, Mal! Do it now!"
Mal's hand was shaking. I could feel my strength ebbing.
"I can't," he whispered miserably. "I can't."
He let go of the knife, letting it fall soundlessly into the snow. Darkness crashed in on us. Mal disappeared. The clearing disappeared. I was thrown into suffocating blackness. I heard Mal cry out and reach toward his voice, but suddenly strong arms had hold of me from both sides. I kicked and struggled ferociously. The darkness lifted, and that quickly I saw it was over. Two of the darkling's guards had hold of me, while Mal struggled between two others.
"Be still or I'll kill you where you stand," Ivan snarled at him. Leave him alone, I shouted.
Shh. The darkling walked toward me, one finger held to his lips, which were curled into a mocking smile. Quiet now, or I will let Ivan kill him. Slowly.
Tears spilled onto my cheeks, freezing in the cold night air.
Torches, he said.
I heard flint striking, and two torches burst into flame, lighting the clearing, the soldiers, and the stag, which lay panting on the ground. The darkling pulled a heavy knife from his belt, and the firelight glinted off Grisha's steel.
We've wasted enough time here.
He strode forward and, without hesitating, slit the stag's throat. Blood gushed into the snow, pooling around the stag's body. I watched as the life left his dark eyes and a sob broke from my chest.
Take the antlers, the darkling said to one of the oprichniki. Cut a piece from each.
The oprichniki stepped forward and bent over the stag's body, a serrated blade in his hand. I turned away, my stomach heaving as a sawing sound filled the stillness of the clearing. We stood in silence, our breath curling in the icy air as the sound went on and on. Even when it stopped, I could still feel it vibrating through my clenched jaw. The oprichnik crossed the glade and handed the two pieces of antler to the darkling. They were almost evenly matched, both ending in double prongs of roughly the same size. The darkling clasped the pieces in his hands, letting his thumb roll over the rough, silvery bone. Then he gestured, and I was surprised to see David emerge from the shadows in his purple kefta. Of course, the darkling would want his best fabricator to fashion this collar. David wouldn't meet my gaze. I wondered if Jenya knew where he was and what he was doing. Maybe she would be proud. Maybe she thought of me as a traitor now, too. David, I said softly, don't do this. David glanced at me and then hurriedly looked away.
David understands the future, said the darkling,
the edge of a threat in his voice.
And he knows better than to fight it.
David came to stand behind my right shoulder. The darkling studied me in the torchlight. For a moment, all was silence. Twilight had gone, and the moon had risen, bright and full. The glade seemed suspended in stillness.
"Open your coat," said the darkling.
I didn't move. The darkling glanced at Ivan and nodded. Mal screamed, his hands clutching his chest as he crumpled to the ground. "No!" I cried. I tried to run to Mal's side, but the guards on either side of me held tight to my arms. "Please!" I begged the darkling. "Make him stop!" Again the darkling nodded, and Mal's cries ceased. He lay in the snow, breathing hard, his gaze fixed on Ivan's arrogant sneer, his eyes full of hatred. The darkling watched me, waiting, his face impassive. He looked nearly bored. I shrugged off the oprichniki. With shaking hands, I wiped the tears from my eyes and unbuttoned my coat, letting it slide over my shoulders. Distantly, I was aware of the cold seeping through my wool tunic, of the watching eyes of the soldiers and the Grisha. My world had narrowed to the curving pieces of bone in the darkling's hands, and I felt a sweeping sense of terror.
"Lift your hair,"
he murmured. I lifted the hair away from my neck with both hands. The darkling stepped forward and pushed the fabric of my tunic out of the way. When his fingertips brushed against my skin, I flinched. I saw a flash of anger pass over his face. He placed the curving pieces of antler around my throat, one on each side, letting them rest on my collarbones with infinite care. He nodded at David, and I felt the fabricator take hold of the antlers. In my mind's eye, I saw David standing behind me, wearing the same focused expression I'd seen that first day in the workrooms of the little palace. I saw the pieces of bone shift and melt together. No clasp, no hinge. This collar would be mine to wear forever.
"It's done," whispered David.
He dropped the collar,
and I felt the weight of it settle on my neck. I bunched my hands into fists, waiting. Nothing happened. I felt a sudden restless shock of hope. What if the Darkling had been wrong? What if the collar did nothing at all? Then the Darkling closed his fingers over my shoulder, and a silent command reverberated inside me. Light. It felt like an invisible hand reaching into my chest. Golden light burst through me, flooding the clearing. I saw the Darkling squinting in the brightness, his features alight with triumph and exultation. No, I thought, trying to release the light, to send it away. But as soon as the idea of resistance had formed, that invisible hand batted it away like it was nothing. Another command echoed through me. More. A fresh surge of power roared through my body, wilder and stronger than anything I had ever felt. There was no end to it. The control I'd learned, the understanding I'd gained, collapsed before it. Houses I'd built, fragile and imperfect, smashed to kindling in the oncoming flood that was the power of the stag. Light exploded from me in wave after shimmering wave, obliterating the night sky in a torrent of brilliance. I felt none of the exhilaration or joy that I had come to expect from using my power. It wasn't mine anymore. And I was drowning, helpless, caught in that horrible, invisible grip. The Darkling held me there, testing my new limits. For how long, I couldn't tell. I only knew when I felt the invisible hand release its grip. Darkness fell on the clearing once again. I drew a ragged breath, trying to get my bearings, to piece myself back together. The flickering torchlight illuminated the awed expressions of the guards and the Grisha and Mal, still crumpled on the ground, his face miserable, his eyes full of regret. When I looked back at the Darkling, he was watching me closely. His eyes narrowed. He looked from me to Mal, then turned to his men.
"Put him in chains."
I opened my mouth to object, but a glance from Mal made me shut up.
"We'll camp tonight and leave for the fold at first light," said the Darkling. "Send word to the apparat to be ready."
He turned to me.
"If you try to harm yourself, the tracker will suffer for it."
"What about the stag?" asked Ivan.
"Burn it."
One of the Ethereal-Kai lifted his arm to a torch, and the flame shot forward in a sweeping arc, surrounding the stag's lifeless body. As we were led from the clearing, there was no sound but our own footfalls, and the crackling of the flames behind us. No rustle came from the trees, no insect buzz or nightbird call. The woods were silent in their grief.
Chapter 20. We walked in silence for over an hour. I stared numbly down at my feet, watching my boots move through the snow, thinking about the stag and the price of my weakness. Eventually, I saw firelight flickering through the trees, and we emerged into a clearing where a small camp had been made around a roaring fire. I noted several small tents and a group of horses tethered amid the trees. Two opritchniki sat beside the fire, eating their evening meal. Mal's guards took him to one of the tents, pushing him inside and following after. I tried to catch his eye, but he disappeared too quickly. Ivan dragged me across the camp to another tent and gave me a shove. Inside I saw several bedrolls laid out. He pushed me forward and gestured to the pole at the center of the tent. "Sit," he ordered. I sat with my back to the pole, and he tethered me to it, tying my hands behind my back and binding my ankles.
"Comfortable?"
"You know what he plans to do, Ivan."
"He plans to bring us peace."
"At what price?" I asked desperately. "You know this is madness."
"Did you know I had two brothers?"
Ivan asked abruptly. The familiar smirk was gone from his handsome face.
"Of course not. They weren't born Grisha, they were soldiers. And they both died fighting the king's wars. So did my father. So did my uncle."
"I'm sorry."
"Yes, everyone is sorry.
The king is sorry, the queen is sorry, I'm sorry. But only the Darkling will do something about it.
It doesn't have to be this way, Ivan. My power could be used to destroy the fold.
Ivan shook his head.
The Darkling knows what has to be done.
He'll never stop. You know that. Not once he's had a taste of that kind of power. I'm the one wearing the collar now, but eventually it will be all of you. And there won't be anyone or anything strong enough to stand in his way.
A muscle twitched in Ivan's jaw.
Keep talking treason and I'll gag you, he said.
And without another word, he strode out of the tent. A while later, a summoner and a heartrender ducked inside. I didn't recognize either of them. Avoiding my gaze, they silently hunched into their furs and blew out the lamp. I sat awake in the dark, watching the flickering light of the campfire play over the canvas walls of the tent. I could feel the weight of the collar against my neck, and my bound hands itched to claw at it. I thought of Mal, just a few feet away in another tent. I'd brought us to this. If I'd taken the stag's life, his power would have been mine. I'd known what mercy might cost us. My freedom, Mal's life, the lives of countless others. And still I'd been too weak to do what needed to be done. That night I dreamed of the stag. I saw the Darkling cut his throat again and again. I saw the life fading from his dark eyes. But when I looked down, it was my blood that spilled red into the snow. With a gasp, I woke to the sounds of the camp coming to life around me. The tent flap opened, and a heartrender appeared. She cut me loose from the tent pole and dragged me to my feet. My body creaked and popped in protest, stiff from a night spent sitting in a cramped position. The heartrender led me over to where the horses were already saddled, and the Darkling stood talking quietly to Ivan and the other Grisha. I looked around for Mal and felt a sudden jab of panic when I couldn't find him. But then I saw an opreechnik pull him from the other tent.
"What do we do with him?" the guard asked Ivan.
"Let the traitor walk," Ivan replied.
"And when he gets too tired, let the horses drag him."
I opened my mouth to protest, but before I could say a word, the Darkling spoke.
"No," he said, gracefully mounting his horse. "I want him alive when we reach the Shadow Fold."
The guard shrugged and helped Mal mount his horse, then tied his shackled hands to the saddle horn. I felt a rush of relief, followed by a sharp prickle of fear. Did the Darkling intend for Mal to stand trial? Or did he have something far worse in mind for him? He's still alive, I told myself, and that means there's still a chance to save him.
Ride with her, the Darkling said to Ivan. Make sure she doesn't do anything stupid.
He didn't spare me another glance as he kicked his horse into a trot. We rode for hours through the forest, past the plateau where Mal and I had waited for the herd. I could just see the boulders where we'd spent the night, and I wondered if the light that had kept us alive through the snowstorm had been the very thing that led the Darkling to us. I knew he was taking us back to Krybirsk, but I hated to think what might be waiting for me there. Who would the Darkling choose to move against first? Would he launch a fleet of sand skiffs north to Fjerda? Or did he intend to march south to drive the fold into Shuhan? Whose deaths would be on my hands? It took another night and day of travel before we reached the wide roads that would lead us south to the Vi. We were met at the crossroads by a huge contingent of armed men, most of them in opreechniki gray. They brought fresh horses and the Darkling's coach. Ivan dumped me on the velvet cushions with little ceremony and climbed inside after me. Then, with a snap of the reins, we were moving again. Ivan insisted we keep the curtains drawn, but I snuck a peek outside and saw that we were flanked by heavily armed riders. It was hard not to be reminded of the first trip I'd made with Ivan in this same vehicle. The soldiers made camp at night, but I was kept in isolation, confined to the Darkling's coach. Ivan brought me my meals, clearly disgusted at having to play nursemaid. He refused to speak to me as we rode,
and threatened to slow my pulse enough to send me into unconsciousness if I persisted in asking about Mal. But I asked every day anyway, and kept my eyes trained on the little crack of window visible between curtain and coach, hoping to catch a glimpse of him. I slept poorly. Every night I dreamed of the snowy glade and the stag's dark eyes staring at me in the stillness. It was a nightly reminder of my failure and the sorrow my mercy had reaped. The stag had died anyway, and now Mal and I were doomed. Every morning I woke with a fresh sense of guilt and shame, but also with the frustrating feeling that I was forgetting something, some message that had been clear and obvious in the dream, but that hovered just outside of understanding when I woke. I didn't see the Darkling again until we reached the outskirts of Tribirsk, when the door to the coach suddenly opened, and he slid into the seat opposite me. Ivan vanished without a word. "Where's Mal?" I asked as soon as the door had closed. I saw the fingers of his gloved hand clench, but when he spoke, his voice was as cold and smooth as ever.
"We're entering Kribirsk," he said. "When we are greeted by the other Grisha, you will not say a word about your little excursion."
My jaw dropped. "They don't know?"
"All they know is that you've been in seclusion, preparing for your crossing of the Shadow Fold with prayer and rest."
A dry bark of laughter escaped me. "I certainly look well rested."
"I'll say you've been fasting."
"That's why none of the soldiers in Ryavost were looking for me," I said with dawning understanding.
"You never told the king. If word of your disappearance had gotten out, you would have been hunted down and killed by Fjerdan assassins within days.
And you would have had to account for losing the kingdom's only sun summoner." The Darkling studied me for a long moment.
"Just what kind of life do you think you could have with him, Alina? He's Otkazatsia. He can never hope to understand your power, and if he did, he'd only come to fear you. There is no ordinary life for people like you and me."
"I'm nothing like you," I said flatly. His lips curled into a tight, bitter smile.
"Of course not," he said courteously.
Then he knocked on the roof of the coach and it rolled to a stop.
"When we arrive, you'll say your hellos, then plead exhaustion and retire to your tent. And if you do anything reckless, I will torture the tracker until he begs me to take his life."
And he was gone. I rode the rest of the way into Kribirsk alone, trying to stop trembling. "Mal is alive," I told myself. "That's all that matters." But another thought crept in. Maybe the Darkling is letting you believe he's still alive just to keep you in line. I wrapped my arms around myself, praying that it wasn't true. I pulled back the curtains as we rode through Kribirsk and felt a pang of sadness as I remembered walking this same road so many months ago. I'd nearly been crushed by the very coach I was riding in. Mal had saved me, and Zoya had looked at him from the windows of the summoner's coach. I'd wished to be like her, a beautiful girl in a blue kefta. When we finally pulled up to the immense black silk tent, a crowd of Grisha swarmed around the coach. Marie and Ivo and Sergei rushed forward to greet me. I was surprised at how good it felt to see them again. As they caught sight of me, their excitement vanished, replaced by worry and concern. They'd expected a triumphant sun summoner, wearing the greatest amplifier ever known, radiant with power and the favor of the Darkling. Instead, they saw a pale, tired girl, broken by misery.
"Are you all right?"
Marie whispered when she hugged me. "Yes," I promised, "just worn out from the journey." I did my best to smile convincingly and reassure them. I tried to feign enthusiasm as they marveled at Morozova's collar and reached out to touch it. The Darkling was never far from view, a warning in his eyes, and I kept moving through the crowd, grinning until my cheeks hurt. As we passed through the Grisha Pavilion, I caught sight of Zoya sulking on a pile of cushions. She stared greedily at the collar as I passed. "You're welcome to it," I thought bitterly, and hurried my steps. Ivan led me to a private tent close to the Darkling's quarters. Fresh clothes were waiting on my camp cot, along with a tub of hot water and my blue kefta. It had only been a few weeks, but it felt strange to wear Summoner's colors again. The Darkling's guards were stationed all around the perimeter of my tent. Only I knew they were there to monitor as well as protect me. The tent was luxuriously appointed with piles of furs, a painted table and chairs, and a fabricator mirror, clear as water and inlaid with gold. I would have traded it all in an instant to shiver beside Mal on a threadbare blanket. I had no visitors, and I spent my days pacing back and forth with nothing to do but worry and imagine the worst. I didn't know why the Darkling was waiting to enter the Shadow Fold or what he might be planning, and my guards certainly weren't interested in discussing it. On the fourth night, when the flap of my tent opened, I nearly fell off my cot. There was Jenya, holding my dinner tray and looking impossibly gorgeous. I sat up, unsure of what to say. She entered and set down the tray, hovering near the table. "I shouldn't be here," she said. "Probably not," I admitted. "I'm not sure that I'm supposed to have visitors." "No, I mean, I shouldn't be here. It's incredibly dirty." I laughed, suddenly very glad to see her. She smiled slightly and settled herself gracefully on the edge of the painted chair. "They're saying you've been in seclusion, preparing for your ordeal," she said. I examined Jenya's face, trying to glean how much she knew. "I didn't have a chance to say goodbye before I went away," I said carefully. "If you had, I would have stopped you." So she knew I'd run. "How's Bagra?" "No one's seen her since you left. She seems to have gone into seclusion, too." I shuddered. I hoped that Bagra had escaped, but I knew it was unlikely. What price had the Darkling exacted for her betrayal? I bit my lip, hesitating, and then decided to take what might be my only chance. "Jenya, if I could get a word to the king, I'm sure he doesn't know what the Darkling is planning. He..." "Alina," Jenya interrupted. "The king has taken ill. The apparat is ruling in his stead." My heart sank. I remembered what the Darkling had said the day that I'd met the apparat. "He has his uses." And yet the priests hadn't just spoken of toppling kings, but Darklings as well. Had he been trying to warn me? If only I'd been less fearful. If only I'd been more willing to listen. More regrets to add to my long list. I didn't know if the apparat was truly loyal to the Darkling or if he might be playing a deeper game. And now there was no way to find out. The hope that the king might have the desire or will to oppose the Darkling had been a slim one, but it had given me something to hold on to over the last few days. Now that hope was undone, too. "What about the queen?" I asked with faint optimism. A fierce little smile passed over Jenya's lips. "The queen is confined to her quarters. For her own safety, of course. Contagion, you know." That was when I realized what Jenya was wearing. I'd been so surprised to see her, so caught up in my own thoughts, that I hadn't really taken it in. Jenya was wearing red. Korporalkai red. Her cuffs were embroidered with blue, a combination I had never seen before. A chill slid up my spine. What role had Jenya played in the king's sudden illness? What had she traded to wear full Grisha colors? "I see," I said quietly. "I did try to warn you," she said with some sadness. "And you know what the Darkling plans to do?" "There are rumors," she said uncomfortably. "They're all true." "Then it has to be done." I stared at her. After a moment, she looked down at her lap. Her fingers pleated and unpleated the folds of her kefta.
"David feels terrible," she whispered. "He thinks he's destroyed all of Ravka."
"It's not his fault," I said with an empty laugh. "We all did our part to bring about the end of the world." Jenya looked up sharply.
"You don't really believe that?"
Distress was written on her face. Was there a warning there as well? I thought of Mal and the Darkling's threats.
"No,"
I said hollowly.
"Of course not."
I knew she didn't believe me, but her brow cleared, and she smiled her soft, beautiful smile at me. She looked like a painted icon of a saint, her hair a burnished copper halo. She rose, and as I walked with her to the flap of the tent, the stag's dark eyes loomed up in my mind, the eyes I saw every night in my dreams.
"For what it's worth," I said,
"tell David I forgive him. And I forgive you, too," I added silently. I meant it. I knew what it was to want to belong.
"I will,"
she said quietly. She turned and disappeared into the night, but not before I saw that her lovely eyes were full of tears. Chapter 21 I picked at my dinner and then lay down on my cot again, turning over the things that Jenya had said. Jenya had spent nearly her entire life cloistered away in Ulf's Alta, existing uneasily between the world of the Grisha and the intrigues of the court. The Darkling had put her in that position for his own gain, and now he had raised her out of it. She would never again have to bend to the whim of the king and queen, or wear a servant's colors. But David had regrets. And if he did, maybe others did, too. Maybe there would be more when the Darkling unleashed the Shadowfold's power. Though by then it might be too late. My thoughts were interrupted by Ivan's arrival at the entrance to my tent. "Up," he commanded. "He wants to see you." My stomach twisted nervously, but I got up and followed him. As we stepped out of the tent, we were flanked by guards, who escorted us the short distance to the Darkling's quarters. When I saw Ivan, the opritchniki at the entryway stepped aside. Ivan nodded toward the tent. "Go on," he said with a smirk. I desperately wanted to smack that knowing look right off his face. Instead, I lifted my chin and strode past him. The heavy silk slid closed behind me, and I took a few steps forward, then paused to get my bearings. The tent was large and lit by dimly glowing lamps. The floor was covered in rugs and furs, and at its center burned a fire that crackled in a large silver dish. High above it, a flap in the roof of the tent allowed the smoke to escape and showed a patch of the night sky. The Darkling sat in a large chair, his long legs sprawled out before him, staring into the fire, a glass in his hand, and a bottle of kvass on the table beside him. Without looking at me, he gestured to the chair across from him. I walked over to the fire, but I did not sit. He glanced at me with faint exasperation, and then looked back into the flames.
"Sit down, Alina."
I perched on the edge of the chair, watching him warily.
"Speak," he said.
I was starting to feel like a dog. "I have nothing to say."
"I imagine you have a great deal to say."
"If I tell you to stop, you won't stop. If I tell you you're mad, you won't believe me. Why should I bother?"
"Maybe because you want the boy to live."
All of the breath went out of me, and I had to stifle a sob. Mal was alive. The Darkling might be lying, but I didn't think so. He loved power, and Mal's life gave him power over me.
"Tell me what to say to save him,"
I whispered, leaning forward.
"Tell me, and I'll say it."
"He's a traitor and a deserter.
He's the best tracker you have or ever will have."
"Possibly,"
said the Darkling with an indifferent shrug. But I knew him better now, and I saw the flicker of greed in his eyes as he tilted his head back to empty his glass of kvass. I knew what it cost him to think of destroying something he might acquire and use. I pressed this small advantage. "You could exile him,"
Send him north to the permafrost until you need him.
You'd have him spend the rest of his life in a work camp or prison.
I swallowed the lump in my throat.